The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we talk about trading newly listed stocks, bull traps, and Wish.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the f*** is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
We're up 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
Buy the f***ing dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out, life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies.
The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out there making money right now off of penny stocks.
Them two guys is putting their work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity It Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny Strokes, baby.
Today's episode of Pennies Going in Raw is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use to trade with. We use it for charts and news and scanners. Look, guys, we use it for everything except for buying and selling stocks. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if you're not using Benzinga Pro, which you can get for 2 weeks free at pro.benzinga.com, that's pro.benzinga.com, you should at least be checking out their YouTube channel every single day, youtube.com/Benzinga. They have Hot Stocks Lukes and a just plethora of fantastic guests, from me and Hugh to Mia Khalifa to Ripster to CEOs of companies to CEOs of Webull. They have it all, guys. Make sure you check it out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, June the 16th, and you know, obviously last week was super hot, and this week is not exactly last week. It's not bad, but it also isn't, everything isn't on fire. There's some offerings, it's back to almost a knife city kind of situation. Obviously, you've always got to be adapting, but what are you kind of noticing? Did you kind of see this as a bull trap, or just as things got super hot last week and they needed to cool down before they got overextended?
Yeah, so things got super hot and they really need to cool down. The point that I think that this season of PGIR as a whole should be is that, you know, it's not really like the market's going to go one direction for 6 months and then change their direction and go that direction for 6 months. What we've seen is like a lot of range. And so it's been getting used to, and I feel like we use this example all the time, but it's just because it's the truth. The brake and the pedal constantly, okay, always has to be the brake and the pedal, you know, foot on the gas, foot off the break. And that's where, you know, something like a swingers market comes in. And yes, the point of swinging is to hold for the bigger move. But that being said, if something like we get news and it's not the news that we're looking for, and the stock goes up 30%, hell yeah, we can take some off the table. Because something like Vissel today got great news and it actually was red for a minute at halfway throughout the day. So that's like an instance where, like, yeah, like if it's up like 10, 15, 20, 30%, take some profit, and then we'll come back to it and buy it back lower. That's one of those things where you can kind of pay yourself and manage your trade at the same time. I think that we're through the buy, hold, and in 2 months make 1,000%. I think we're out of that stage, and I think that from here on out, positions really need to be closely managed.
Another thing you really, you know, were probably happy about this week, strong reversal on TRCH. It was your swing from a while ago. You called it right before the swing downturn situation of over the past couple months. But it hit over fives, dropping below fives right now as we're recording this Tuesday after hours. But could you kind of give us, you know, the reason why it turned around, the reason, you know, you held, why you had conviction on it through the whole thing, and how you handled that drop and everything?
Yeah, so it's never easy when, I mean, we always hope for dips, but with something like TRCH, I mean, it flew. They had, the same time that I called the swing, the market was really hot for swinging. You know, everything was mooning. And then also the same day, they came out with news that they were done their debt. So literally, I had gotten done Sunday talking about, hey, the next news that we should see is debt release. And then the next day, that same PR came out and everybody chased it up. It's always tough because we always want dips. But when something goes from literally $4 down to under $2, that's when it's like, holy hell, like, what the hell? So, I mean, I know that even when it went with my average, you know, I thought that I was getting a great price at 250 and then it kept dipping. So my average was about 208 when I stopped buying, and it did go underneath my average for a good, like 2, 3, 4 weeks. And what had happened was that the market got cold and the company went into a quiet period, which means that they're literally not going to release news. Like, they're inside, like, they're trying to handle things internally. And that's when I was like, well, you know, just roll me over, you know, step on me. And yeah, like they drove the bus over me, and I was really frustrated. But again, the thing that I kept having to tell myself was, has anything changed with the catalyst? Has anything changed with the fundamentals of the company? And, you know, why would I have dumped it other than the short-term price action didn't make sense? And when I had asked myself that question, it didn't make sense. There was no reason for me to dump it because the fundamentals hadn't changed. There was no negative catalyst that had come out. And so that's what really ultimately had me add as much as I did. And I had a pretty good amount. I had a pretty good amount of TRCH. I had one account all in. It was in like 3 or 4 different accounts. So all in all, though, I knew what I owned. I honestly was not expecting sixes. I thought that on news we would get a nice pop back to like 455 and we would all make a great buck and call it a day. But I mean, at the way that looking right now, I mean, yeah, it's back. It closed right up at 5. It was sitting at 6 earlier. You know, who knows what this does? Who really knows what this does? And part of what I wanted to go over today was that I'm not going to sit here and be like, okay, this is what it's going to do and this is how it's going to react. We need to trade what's in front of us. So as a TRCH holder, we can't just be all emotional and flipping out and stuff, because that's just not going to go anywhere. But we need to create a plan so that we are ready for whatever comes at us. And I think that that's how I'm going to play. And that's how I think everybody should play, because everybody's up a great buck. Most people are up 100, 170%. I saw, I think someone was up 201%. So, how we're going to play this smart, but we're also going to try and squeeze as much money out as we can.
So, what is your plan going forward with TRCH? Have you sold a majority of the position? Are you planning to add back at certain levels? Where are you going forward with this one?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So what I'm going to do is that I actually sold half right above 520, and that was just a lock profits. This swing was more.
So you're riding a free position at this point.
Oh yeah,
because
you locked
in over half of 100. Okay.
Oh yeah, no. I could. There's no way that I can possibly lose on this position. Like I said, my average was at 208. So when I cut it right over 5, it was more than a 100% gain. I cut half there. And then I cut another quarter over 6. And that wasn't even because I felt like we had finished our run. That was because our run had happened so fast. When you look at the chart, I mean, it's just a zoom. So my thing was like, hey, this is up a lot. You know, the news was good, but I do feel like a pullback will come before anything. I probably won't add any unless it goes like sub 350. But at this point, the way that I'm looking at it is that let's see where it goes. I still think that the market cap is relatively small. I still love what Meta's doing. And I still have a decent amount of shares But I already locked great profit. Like, I already locked some stupid profit that I could walk away for the rest of the month, the rest of the quarter. So I'm going to play it like, okay, I'm going to have a stop loss on, but I'm also going to, if there's any negative catalyst come out, because the one thing that I am worried about is that the dividend is good, but the one thing that I'm worried about is I'm worried about them dropping a massive offering. Like, I'm talking like 100 million, okay? And that's what I am worried about happening. Because I probably wouldn't blame them. They're doing a reverse split, which is normal for mergers. Okay, let me get that straight there. It is normal for mergers to do reverse splits, but the thing that comes with that is that they usually do an offering with it. And that's what I'm worried about. So if they drop a massive offering comparative to market cap, then that's when I'll probably just sell and be like, great, we made 150, 200%. Let's walk away, go grab beers. But if the price kind of stays above $4 a share, and you know, if it stays above $4 a share and it runs into the merger, I'll probably just hold these and see what it does. And then one day when I get bored with it and it's not doing anything, then I'll drop it or something. But right now, you know, I'm having so much fun with it. This is what I love about swinging. This is what I love about trading. So as long as it kind of hangs above four, if it hangs above four, no bad catalyst, I'll hold it. Yeah, and that's what I think. Like,
so if it goes under four, do you have a stop loss there?
See that's going to be the thing where it depends, because that might be where I add some. But like I said, is that if it feels like a bad catalyst is coming, like, you know, like when I think like the saying is somebody always knows before everyone else knows, and so if I just start to see massive shares starting to get dumped, then I'll know that that's somebody bigger.
You'll contribute to the dumping.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I won't feel bad because we're all up massive percentage.
Okay.
But like I said, though, is that if it just starts kind of dwindling down for the next like week or two, then yeah, I'll add some. But like I said, is that if it's just aggressive dumping, then I'll just take my profit and go. On the flip side, like I said, any bad catalyst, I'm out. And for anybody who was holding with me in the 170s, you know, $2 range, take your initial investment off the table, okay? The thing that I hate more than anything, or the thing that bothers me more than anything, is when we get a 100, 150, 200 percenter, and then people ride the trade all the way back down. We will not do that on here. So yeah, that's my rant.
All right. Okay. Well, moving forward, Bitcoin back over 40,000. You saw after the Bitcoin conference a couple weeks ago, or weekends ago. I'm not sure if we mentioned this, but I thought the meme that was like Bitcoin's dipping and all the buy supports drunk in Miami. you know, you saw it dip around like 5K there, and you know it's back over 40K, and the miners all took a big hit, mainly after the whole Elon thing. But they're actually starting to respond to Bitcoin really well, with, you know, some of the ones that Manziel mentioned on the previous episode, with, you know, Riot, Mara, Can, all of those, and you know you're kind of seeing them respond to Bitcoin and run with their sympathies.
Yeah, and that's definitely it. The one thing that I think is really great to think about is that if you don't start to chart Bitcoin a little bit, support, resistance, ranges, so that you have an idea of, hey, okay, if it breaks out over 40K, you know, then it can really start to run, but it's not going to break a new high. Like this is like kind of, as a trader, you know, this is where like the evolution comes from, is that not thinking, okay, it breaks 40K, now it's going to go to 70K. Understanding that if it breaks 40K, it has a good chance to run to 55, but not break 55. So I'm going to get out at 54. That's where like the evolution of the trading needs to come from. And I think that we're seeing that with, especially like Manziel and some of these younger traders who really came into the Corona market and really just held and banked, you know, and then they maybe saw a pullback in their accounts and they adapted. And now they're really starting to kill it, like William Mietzos having like that 200K week, you know. So I think it's awesome to see. But I think that that's going to be like the evolution of the trading.
It's also interesting just watching Elon just
going back and forth on his ideas about it. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, I think he realized he made a mistake and now he just is trying to backpedal. Because, I mean, you saw him say, I will consider Bitcoin if we find some like 50% energy bullshit. You know, obviously, I'm not a, you know, chemical engineer or anything. So I'm, you know, I don't know exactly what he was asking for. And you're seeing like El Salvador making Bitcoin legal tender. So, I mean, there is news coming out around it. And obviously, it's always something that, you know, excitement grows around as time moves on. But as to the main part of the episode, we want to talk about trading newly listed stocks, ones that came out that day. You know, and there are multiple different kinds. There's direct listings, there's IPOs, even SPACs to some extent, mergers, et cetera, where there's a new ticker on the market. You saw it today, which is Tuesday, with ALZN. Yeah, it opened up right below 30 and then it halts up or halts above 30 and then the rest of the day it dwindles down. I know a lot of people don't like to trade these new IPOs or direct listings, but clearly there are a lot of, you know, different ways to do it. Do you kind of want to touch on some of those and the differences in them?
Yeah, yeah. So I actually have some ALZN. Nothing crazy. I have like 4,000 shares left. I mean, the way that I played it was I was just buying and holding. And I sold some at 25. I sold some at 12. And then I bought some back like right around, I guess it was like 13.50 I had at my averages. And the way that I'm handling this is kind of like ALF. It's got a really small float. And the way, okay, let me backtrack. The way that I think of these is that they can go, but it's not one of those like buy and hold situations, because when they go hard. They go 200-300%, but you might get stopped out 1, 2, 3 times in a row. And that's kind of what we're seeing, you know, like with this ALZN, you know, I mean, I have 4,000 shares at 13.50 and I'm only getting stopped out at $9 a share, but you can see that this is starting to create a base and kind of like ALF. When ALF IPO'd, I mean, ALF went from $4 down to $2, and then it went all the way up to like $6 or something.
Yeah, one of the best ways I like to do them is whenever they list, seeing what price they're listing at, and then waiting for that dip, you know, because they're always going to get that initial pop. You saw it this morning, and, you know, more times than not, they're going to have a drop later in the day. Obviously, there's that difference in direct listing and IPOs. I think getting into that even before we touch on this is a good idea, knowing obviously one of them, the company can unload shares and it's less favorable for the investor, you know? Or would you not recommend, like, which one is that? And would you not recommend playing that one?
So you have direct listing, IPO, and we'll even throw SPAC in there. The way that I look at it is IPO is gold standard. Direct listing is meh. But, you know, not like super gray area. And then SPAC is like, if you want to invest in SPAC, I don't know, I'd probably tell you to stay away from that or use super good risk management. So we'll take direct listing first because I feel that this is the one that is most easily confused. And direct listing is essentially when the company doesn't have the money to do the IPO route, or they don't want to dilute their shares. And so instead of creating shares like you would with an IPO, you essentially just sell your shares directly to the market. So that's kind of where like the direct listing comes from. Think of it like a house. You don't go from broker, you don't go from seller to broker to buyer. You just go seller to buyer. And this is kind of how this works. So if I have 5,000 shares, Dan is on the market, I'm just selling my shares. Now that doesn't mean that anybody necessarily will buy the shares, but usually they do. Usually you can just saturate the market.
Could you kind of say a direct listing is like an IPO followed by an offering?
Yeah, like, I mean, essentially. Amount? But with the IPO, there's like a little more guarantors where with the direct listing, there's virtually no guarantee. So the risk to the company is that nobody buys the shares. The risk to the investor is that if I buy them at 15 and they just start saturating the market with the shares, it becomes simple supply and demand. So if they start dumping hundreds of thousands of shares on the market, then all of a sudden, you know, the stock could easily be at $11, $10, $9, you know? So that's kind of like the direct listing. If you're going to play the direct listing, if you're going to play the direct listing, I would just say that at least know what you're getting into. Like one of the biggest, have enough room to average down, because the good part is that you could easily be getting a great deal. Like sometimes like companies don't have the money to take it public through an IPO, and that's fine. But the sneaky part about a direct listing is that it's essentially just people that own the company that are just selling part of the company. So you know that they're not going to sell it unless it's at a favorable premium to them. So like it's like I'm not gonna buy my candy bar for a dollar and sell for $1.20. But if you offer me $3, hell yeah, I'll sell you my candy bar. That's the way that I'll explain that. The next one I will go to is the IPO. Think of the IPO as kind of like when you're going on like a college tour. When first you show the goods, you know, your grades, you know, you talk to the management team a little bit, the teachers, and you talk to them a little bit, you know, you kind of see what kind of person they are. And then on the same side of it, you know, you not only do you have to get accepted to the college, but you also have to want to go to the college. And same thing like an IPO, you have to show your goods, but you also have to agree to the investment bank, the underwriter, you know, you kind of get some options as well if you're like a premium, you know, IPO. So the IPO takes a little bit longer time. You know, they get to go through everything. You know, the management team and the underwriters work hand in hand. It's like a big, big process. And then from there, the underwriters work and they take shares from the company, create shares, and then they sell them to, instead of going, so like we said, direct listing, they sell them to investment bankers, market makers, and then they sell them to the retail. And that's the key difference there, is that the company virtually has no risk at that point. Obviously the company will still own a majority. Well, you'd hope a majority, but at that point there's really no risk. It's out of their,
You say risk, what do you mean, like risk?
Well, I'm saying like when you do like a direct listing, people have to buy the shares. Mm-hmm. When you do an IPO, it's kind of like that middleman. So it's the company, underwriter, investment banker, consumer. So
other people can buy the shares aside from just the retail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that like, so I'm not technically.
Ideally. Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, like when through an IPO, I'm not buying.
The diluted shares in the company.
Yeah. With a direct listing, I'm buying them strictly from like John Smith, the VP, right. Essentially. With an IPO, there's a middleman. There's actually almost two middlemen. Think of it like that.
If you're just buying them from a certain person, like in the company in a direct listing, but in an IPO, you know, you're just buying them from.
Yeah, you're buying them from the underwriter and the investment bank that creates the deal, and that's where the risk for the company becomes nothing, because somebody's already bought those shares. They're not. Nobody cares at that point. You know. Like they already have the money in hand. Nobody, it's done with.
Okay. And how are the prices of these decided on? Because you know, they're saying like before they open on the day, it'll be like looking like it's going to be priced at 20, then at 1550, then it comes out and it's 1550. Why do they rotate beforehand? How does it end up at a certain price?
Yeah. So the way that it works is the way that an IPO, I'm gonna say it with an IPO, I'm just gonna go down that route, is they want to, the investment bankers and the underwriters want to make it as attractive as possible, but they still want to make a good margin. So what they're trying to do is that they're trying to create momentum at an attractive price, and that's why, you know, you'll see something like what was like a really good IPO, like what was it, Airbnb? Airbnb IPO'd at 162. It went all the way down to 120, and now it's sitting at 150, and it hit a high of 219. That's all within the last year. So the way that I look at it is that they try and make it an attractive price, but that's all based on fundamentals, like old school valuation and just understanding the market. And that's why when the market's crappy, you won't see many companies IPO, because people just don't have that said cash to throw it into a new company. But when the market's really hot you notice that all these companies IPO. So that's something to keep in mind now. You know, that's something that we don't have to really worry about right now because the SPY is constantly hitting all-time highs. But when you start to see SPY pulling back, you won't see as many IPOs, and that's just how it works. But as far as the pricing goes, you want to. It's kind of like a game of how much interest does the institution show? How much interest does the institutions show? And how much is on the offering or like the S1? If the S1 is over consumed, then that's just going to take shares from the retail, pushing the price farther up. But usually, if we're talking about like how it should work or how it does work, is that the middleman or the underwriter or the investment bank should create somewhat of a discount at open. So if the shares are worth $100 share, ideally they would want to offer them to the public at 80, giving, you know, having everyone want to buy these shares, pushing the momentum up. That's what I would expect.
All right. So lastly, we have SPACs, special purpose acquisition companies. We've gone over them before, obviously. We had that big bullish SPAC trends back in, you know, late last year and early this year. And basically, it's a company merging with a blank check company to go public on the market. From what we recently saw, they'd mainly pop at the beginning. And then, you know, on the expected merger, the blank check company would go up. And then by the time they merged, or whenever that the ticker change happened, you'd see a downtrend happen until, you know, it found that bottom and then it reversed hard. But you kind of did say some negative sentiment on SPACs. Do you want to kind of touch on why?
The due diligence that usually takes so long of IPOs is not the same due diligence with SPACs. And so it's like when people come to me and they ask me like, oh, like, what do you think of this company? You know, most of the time, it's what I know off the top of my head, but it's not me doing 2 weeks of DD. It's the same thing with the SPACs. You know, it's kind of like, hey, like, what do you think you're going to do? You know, same with car lots. Car lots overpromised. And IPO companies do this and can overpromise as well. It's just with the SPAC companies, there's so much more hype around it. And there's so much more like, hey, like, just understand.
You feel like you're getting in something at a super low price. Yeah.
Yeah, and when in reality, like, there can be a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
That's all. No, that's really it.
No, I mean, I saw a car lots, and after all that hype was died down, and I understand. But I guess moving forward from the newly listed things, we got two more things. Someone asked a question about, you know, watching after hours trading to decide about the next day's market. Obviously, watching pre-market trading is, but what do you think about after-hours trading to figure out, you know, next day situations?
So I used to do a lot of overnight things to get around PDT, so buying right before close and then selling in the morning. And the only issue is that some of it would pop up at 4 a.m., but I wouldn't be able to sell. Now, Webull wasn't around then. It's crazy to think that Webull wasn't around when I was first trading, but Webull wasn't around then. You know, you had like U stock trade and some other things, but that really wasn't an option. So what would usually happen is that I would buy it at 4, it would pop to 5 at 4 a.m., trickle down, and I would sell at 4:20 before open. Again, that's not a bad, you know, a green is green, but you know, obviously I would have liked to gotten it at that 5. And I also didn't see the same risk reward because I always felt like, hey, yes, this looks like it wants to pop, but I'm not sure. Now what I notice is that as far as after hour trading and begin pre-market trading is that it kind of goes in like seasonality. It'll be hot for 2 weeks and then nothing will go on during after hours. And then for 2 weeks, it'll be super hot. So if I were to play it, first off, you can't play after hours with size on most things, which is why I personally don't day trade after hours. Like, you can't really take size on things. And the other thing is that I just don't, like, I want to be away from the desk and I don't want to be inside a trade and not know. So if I were going to trade after hours and pick out for the next day, I would pick for something, again, high relative volume, probably needs a news catalyst, and the chart is set out. So that means that like breaking out to the 52 over the 52 week high, or has news at like 3 p.m., 4 p.m., 5 p.m., and it just, you know, the chart sets up based off that news. So hits a new high, comes down, hits a new high, comes down, hits a new high. And, and I would be okay with that. But you also have to make sure that futures aren't like super red, because if futures are super red, they'll just wreck momentum. So what I'm trying to say is that I wouldn't play with size. I would make sure that after hours had been hot for a few weeks. Then in addition to it, I would want something that has a catalyst and has enough volume and the chart is setting up to gap, but make sure futures aren't red, because any one of those things can mess up the next day's trade.
All right. Yeah. Usually in after hours, whenever I was trading after hours, which I'm not really right now, I usually just play spreads or try and get some dips on things. Last but not least, a lot of people are talking about Wish. It's kind of crazy to me at first. This may be a flex. I used to get Wish ads all the time on Facebook. Made a little money. I don't get Wish ads anymore. Not to brag. But yeah, I mean, the company that essentially sells cheap ass fake goods and advertises them all over Facebook. And I actually think they are one of like the bigger, online retail companies. I remember hearing about that, and they spend most of their money on Facebook ads. I know all this because of a Gary V video I'm just remembering right now. They spend all their money on like ads. It's like, them and Fashion Nova out there really, really flexing it. But why are so many people on it? I bought $26 Yeezys on there 2 years ago. This site that sells cheap goods and takes a month and a half to deliver. Why? What's with all the hype?
Yeah. So, first off, look at the market cap. Their market cap is coming up on $7 billion. That's insane.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, Wish is actually like big. They do a lot of sales, man.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like more like 1, maybe 2 billion tops.
If their delivery time wasn't bad, oh my god, people would order way more stuff. But obviously, when you're getting things that are $140 for 22, and the shipping is a little pricey. It's coming from like Beijing. But what's the deal with it, man?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is that if you look at the chart, I mean, there was a huge bottom out at like the $8, $9, $10 range, and you can see that's kind of curling back. And I mean, honestly, if this gets over like really 13, I mean, 13 to 15, then this is 20 probably easily. So right now at this close at like 1140. I mean, it's kind of, there's pretty good risk to reward. I haven't been able to go through the financials yet, but just from like a chart perspective, it looks bottomed out. It looks like it's curling. And, over that 1250, 13 mark, 1520, if any of you guys remember OSTK overstock, this kind of reminds me of that, to where like maybe it's one of those where, it just starts going. And it just squeezes shorts that have just been comfortable in it for like a year. I don't know. I'll be excited for this one. I'll be excited for this one. If it gets over that $12.50, $15 mark, then, $20, maybe $25, $30. Honestly, if this starts really starting to run, this could be jumping dollars per hour.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll leave you with that, guys. And before you go, make sure you like us on Spotify. We're climbing up the ranks there. And we realize they're big old money guys. They like you to be around a while, and it all depends on the amount of like subscribers or likes you have. Make sure to like us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars. Y'all know the deal. Show us some love, because we love you. And use code PGIR on manscaped.com. We'll see you Sunday. Stay green.